Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shares for Beginners.
G'day and welcome to Shares for Beginners podcast. My name is not Phil Muscatello. It's Jodie Pedersen. But Phil is interviewing me today. And what are you going to talk about, Phil?
I'm not sure. We haven't even got an agenda. This is it's kind of a holiday episode.
The holiday special.
Yeah. So this is the first episode of 2023. So we're going to be reviewing a bit of what's happened last year and what it's like to be on holidays and just considering the festive season and, you know, what we've both experienced in the financial markets over the last year. Okay. So Jodie Pedersen is a very old friend of the podcast. A very young old friend of the podcast, one of the first supporters of the podcast. And she was with eInvest, and eInvest doesn't exist anymore.
So no, it doesn't.
What's happened there? What was eInvest just to start with?
So? Absolutely. So eInvest was an active ETF distributor owned by the Perennial Group, was their parent. And so basically what they decided, the Perennial Group decided to merge eInvest back underneath the Perennial banner. So all the old eInvest ETFs that we've discussed previously on the podcast, like IMPQ and eCore and all those other ones, they all still exist and they're still active on the exchange. It's just that the parent of eInvest, Perennial Partners, they're the ones distributing it now. So it meant that I am no longer working at the moment because I'm about to go on a big adventure.
Yeah, tell us about the adventure you're going to live in. I'm so jealous. Live in Italy.
I'm going to go live in Italy, which
Milan.
Is wild. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the merging of eInvest back into the Perennial business actually worked out fairly well for me in terms of timing, because yeah, I'm moving to Italy. My husband is actually starting a fund over there. And so...
And yeah, I think it's always good for investors to understand, you know, the bigger picture and what's going going on all around the world.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of other investment kind of funds and products that only institutional investors really invest into. What I mean by institutional investors are, you know, the large sovereign wealth funds, the large superannuation funds here in Australia, the large pension funds overseas. You know, they have really, you know, their tickets, what we call ticket size, or the amount that they invest, is much larger than, of course, you know, people like you and I. And they have, you know, different needs. And so there is, a whole bunch of kind of products out there and funds out there that just only cater to these types of investors. And but it's what's really cool is that it means that, you know, you may not know that you're in, as if you've got your retirement, your superannuation fund with, say, Sun Super or Australian Super or whoever, you may not know exactly what they've been invested in, but they are often invested in things like large renewable energy funds, large infrastructure funds. They often talk about their infrastructure projects where, they're buying into large, you know, say, for example, airports and other infrastructure projects. Usually that's in the form of a fund. And they're obviously attractive investors for institutional investors, but it's kind of more difficult for individual investors to get in there.
I was having lunch yesterday with some old friends from school, and one of them is quite a big mover and shaker in financial services. And we were just having a chat, you know, and I was sort of saying, because again, they're dealing in these very large institutional sized pots of money, which is, you know, it's okay, it's where our super's invested in. But, and I sort of said to him, well, what about ETFs? Are they making, because he's dealing all in managed funds.
Sure.
And, you know, I said, what about ETFs? And he just scoffed.
Because
you just don't, because we all talk about ETFs as retail investors, but the vast majority of investment is really still in these quite expensive, possibly managed funds.
Well, okay, they might look expensive from the retail price if you look, but often the institutional investor will negotiate the price of what they pay. So they will, because they're investing such large amounts of money, they can get usually pretty good discounts. Mm. So in terms of cost, they'd probably be cheaper than ETFs on a percentage basis, because they've got that economy. Those big funds have those economies of scale to really negotiate good pricing. And yeah, in terms of ETFs for larger institutional investors, there's just, there's better ways for them to do it, and more safe ways, more direct ways, where they have kind of more oversight, more control. And, you know, they can negotiate fees. You can't negotiate a fee for you're an ETF, right?
They're low enough already.
They are low enough. Well, you hope so. But, it's that kind of world. It's things are usually a little bit more bespoke it's a little bit more complicated. But so that's, they don't really do ETFs much. But I have heard of some super funds using them for tactical reasons. So maybe just really short-term move, like, if they want to get exposure really short term to a currency or to a specific asset class, or even if they just want a short term exposure while they're changing their strategy. So if they're in the process of changing their strategy and they just need, you know, exposure to a specific area of the market just for a little bit of time, then maybe it would make sense. And so I have heard of that occasionally, institutional investors using ETFs for those reasons, but it's more of a retail investor thing.
Mm. What is a managed fund?
Well, it's pretty similar to an ETF in the sense that it's a pool of assets that one buys units into, just like an ETF. But ETFs are exchange-traded funds, so you buy those units, you transact on and off the exchange using your online broker or other broker. Whereas a managed fund, it is not exchange-traded. So to buy and sell the units, you have to deal with the administrator and custodian, which is more paperwork, essentially. So it's just a different way of accessing a pool of funds of which you own units or, portions too. So, and that pool of funds, just like an ETF, those managed funds will have their own investment guidelines, their own investment goals, their own restrictions on what their type of asset class they're targeting, or what type of, what type of approach that they're taking. So that will all be defined for the managed fund, so you know like what you're investing in, essentially.
Yeah, and so if you go to a financial advisor, often they'll put you into a basket of managed funds, won't they?
Yeah. And, in terms of exposure to the underlying, in terms of like exposure to the markets, you're still going to get the same thing. Mm. It's just accessing it slightly differently. And, I generally, as a retail investor, I prefer ETFs because I really like being able to just buy and sell on the exchange. I love that ease of transaction. But, institutional investors, ease of transaction is not really their main priority.
Mm.
They're probably more worried about risk, fees, control, transparency, so they can get that usually better through a managed fund.
Yeah. So in 2022, I did my RG146 course.
Congratulations.
And you've done an RG146 course.
Yes.
So I actually know a lot more about markets and the Australian financial system than I've ever thought that I would have to know about. What I found interesting about it, though, is first of all, the first point, is it seems to me, I've always felt that there was this code that people in the finance industry spoke in. But now I realise that it's not a code, it's the language that we were taught in the RG146 course. And it's all based on the regulations of the Corporations Act. And so all of this terminology, and I hear people speaking that I'm interviewing, and they use a term, and I just don't realise how solid that term is based on the regulations. And the second point is, I actually feel a lot more confidence in the financial system because I realise how structured it is. I mean, it can be limiting as well, I think, because there's a lot of people who are not getting a lot of financial advice. Anyway, that's not a question, that's just a comment, but
absolutely.
Let's hear your point of view.
Yeah, the more you research into it, the more you realise how... And as someone who's worked in the industry for a long time, I see behind the scenes, I know what goes into launching an ETF. I know how much work is involved. I know how much legal advice you need to make sure you're following these laws. I know how complicated they are from an operations perspective. I understand, you know, and now you have a, probably have a better idea as well from like marketing rules, like what you can say and what you can't say, and what the penalties are if you don't follow the rules. They can be quite severe. So as someone who's, yeah, the more, it's interesting. I'm actually really glad that you got that impression from it, because I think it can. Okay, I used to do ballet when I was a child growing up, and like what I love about ballet is it's so technically complex, but you're there just to make it look effortless. That's part of your job. You've got to smile through it, and part of the procedure is to make it look effortless, to make it look precise and perfect. And I guess like financial services is similar in a way, because there's all these cogs and work going on behind the scenes, but then it's our job to make it seem effortless, to make it easier for investors to get involved, to make it seem simple when it's not. And so maybe we've done too good a job if people think it's just too simple or too easy. I don't think we're there yet. I do. Yeah, I'm actually really glad that you came away from that with that impression that it's actually a lot more complicated than what it sounds, because it is more complicated than what it looks from the outside. But I have a question for you, Phil, about your RG146. What was the thing that surprised you the most about it?
Well, let me start off talking about the doing the wrong course, because I did the wrong RG146 and then did the correct RG146. And the wrong one that I did was basically the credentials you would need to work as a bank teller or at an insurance company call center. And I just, what was interesting is actually having done that, even though I didn't even need to do it. But now when I go to a bank, which is not very often anymore, or you're talking to someone from an insurance company, which I had to do recently because our car got written off. And just to find out about how structured the interactions are between customers and representatives of a bank, financial services group, or an insurance company are. And they're really, really constrained in what they can say and what they can not do. But also that you have to be, those people have to be proactive in dealing with you. It's like when, if you go to the bank and someone, it sounds like someone's upselling something to you, but that's, they're not actually upselling. They're actually required to try and make sure that you got getting the best product from that institution. So that was interesting and surprising. There was also having gone through the write-off stage and now knowing about a bit more about insurance, because you know, if you have a car written off, you feel guilty. You think, oh, is the insurance company going to think that's my fault, or are they? Which they do, of course. If you're writing, got a car written off, you know, a car caught fire in a car park.
Sure.
But you realise that insurance companies actually have people called actuaries who are looking at risk, and you're just one little tiny risk that hasn't paid off for them amongst a whole range of them. Absolutely. And once they've assured themselves that you're, you know, you're not trying to scam them, or you lit the fire yourself, it went really smoothly. So I think that was surprising in a way to find, not so much surprising, but illuminating.
Because I think it is true. Like, it can, like, as someone who's worked in this industry for a long time, you've got to do disclaimers. Like, you know, I'm not a financial advisor. We have to talk about that. And it can kind of sound like, I'm not a financial advisor, junior in research. You know, I don't know your circumstances. Always seek advice, read the PDS. All that stuff. You sound like a robot, but as someone who's, you know, you would must do that too when you have to do the disclaimers of this podcast. But it is all actually there for a real reason, and the penalties for not doing it are high.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like it's our challenge, and that's actually what I really love about this work is it's my challenge to make sure that all that is definitely done and done well, but also trying to maintain this feeling of that finance is accessible and understandable. It might make it a smooth interaction, or make it hopefully a positive interaction too. And I guess that's also what you do too, in a way, in this podcast.
Well, that's a perfect segue into my next point, is that coming away from it, you'd also realize the constraints of people finding out information about finance that's not conflicted. And you try and do a podcast about this, but you've got to actually be very careful because you are actually operating under these rules, which is why I had to do this finance education.
Yeah. I think it's actually really good that, you know, that it had to, the education had to be done, even though I know, like, it would have been quite a pain for you to do this year. Like, and like, it's probably, it's an achievement to get it done. But I think it is true. If we are, like, more and more people are listening to podcasts, YouTube channels, things like that. And if they're not getting the right advice, there is actually, like, potentially,
yeah,
well, not the right advice, but even just the right information. Because it's not advice, it's information.
There is a tendency, though, because of all this regulation, that there are so many constraints on even just talking about investment and money that it becomes very hard. And we're in a situation now, I've just found out that there's going to be something like 13,000 financial advisors for the whole of Australia. 13,000.
And it used to be about 19 a few years ago.
I think it was about 25 or something like that. But
really? Yeah, the numbers have been steadily dropping massively because of these increased education requirements.
But it's also the costs involved as well. Mm. Like if you go and see a financial advisor, you've got to get a statement of advice, which is going to cost $3,000 to $5,000. And you can see the reason for that because they're not actually making too much money out of the statement of advice. It's just what's required by the legislation. And it's really hard for ordinary people to straddle that. I mean, if you haven't got a lot of money, you're not going to be able to afford a financial advisor.
No.
But on the other hand, you want to try and work out how you can get ahead, which you do these days with YouTube and podcasts and blogs and
books,
Instagram influencers. And then on the other side of it is, if you're talking about crypto, there is no legislation. Sorry, yeah, it's end of rave.
I agree entirely. Like, I mean, I downloaded TikTok. One of my things I did for this year is I downloaded TikTok for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was horrified at all the crypto
pumpers.
Pumping and dumping going on there. It has cooled down since crypto markets have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually have deleted TikTok, so I'm not on there anymore. So maybe it hasn't cooled down. But I was horrified at what I was seeing. I wonder if we'll ever get a really true picture of how much people have lost money in these crypto coins scams. Because I think it's like gambling. People tend not to talk about their losses.
Mm.
They only talk about their wins, right? Mm-hmm. And because it's such an opaque market, I just think there must be a lot of people out there who've probably lost money. And I'm sure there's some people who've made money out of this too. Mm. But I do, yeah, the TikTok plus crypto stuff was wild. And even property, you know, it's you're totally allowed to unregulated. Talk about property on social media, which is why you see all these channels, you know, talking about house hacking and you know, in buying investment properties and flipping and all that kind of stuff. It's because there's much less regulations on that, even though, like, the amounts of money, because of the leverage or the loans you can get, the amounts of money that we're talking about are enormous. That's a huge part of most people's personal wealth, their housing. So and yet somehow here we are, but we're talking about all the good stuff.
Well, that's right. Well, it's you know, that's financial products is what you're constrained in talking about. I'm feeling so, I really feel passionate about, there's a lot of people who don't have a lot of money and they, you know, they might have a bit of super, but people have all sorts of financial circumstances and can be constrained financially in so many ways. And we're suddenly in this world where there's so many opportunities to get your act together. But unless you can talk about it.
I agree. But I think
then they'll be fall prey to crypto scammers.
Yeah. Look, I think buyer beware. If it sounds, old age adages do still stands through. Like, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm.
You know, if someone's flogging a product really hard at you, you should probably take that as a red flag.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even things online, like when they talk about retiring early, you know, financial freedom, all these words, that are these buzzwords, which sound like, you know, they sound like just everyday words, but I think that they can be like red flags for information. So I think, you know, learning to, I think sometimes boring is best, you know, like just, and learning to kind of be a bit skeptical and choose where you get your information from. Don't just, I think it's really easy with these algorithms on social media just to absorb, like, you know, absorb more and more information. And the algorithm on TikTok or Instagram just keeps pushing stuff to you if they think that you're interested into it. And so you just end up kind of absorbing it without properly sitting back and thinking, oh, what's the, you know, what's the bigger picture here? Who is this person?
What's the downside?
What's the downside? Like, you
know,
who
benefits?
Exactly. All this stuff. So, but I think that that's why, you know, I do think podcasting is a much a better format because you can go into more detail. You can, it's also a little bit more cerebral. Like, it's more intimate. So I think you've got more time to think about it.
We're right in everyone's ears.
Exactly. But I think it is actually a better format for this type of, these types of conversations. And I think, you know, do your own research. I know it's a boring statement and people say it all the time, but it is true.
Well, it is. I mean, this is the thing. You have to do your own research.
Yeah.
And people don't want to take responsibility for that. And I can understand that. You've got better things to do. But you really have to research every decision that you make.
So where do you, like it's interesting, you and I have talked about this before, Phil, like, because I have someone who's, you know, I've worked in this industry for some time. I often have friends coming up to me, like, say we're at a barbecue or something. It's really interesting because it's, because I think because I'm a woman, I do think the interaction is different than with other guys. Like, I have people coming up to me going, hey, Jodie, I know that you're, you know, you work in this ETF space, investing space. Can you tell me more about it? But it's always kind of on the DL. It's always like a whisper, and it's always like they've pulled me aside at a barbecue or something like that. As opposed to, like, I see with my husband and his friends, it's all, it's very much, much more in the open. And they will talk much more openly about finance, about what they're investing in. I think it's fascinating, that difference of, like, how...
It is, isn't it?
Like, why do people come over and whisper to me and pull me aside? I'm always happy to have those conversations and, like, you know, with my friends. And I'm glad that they ask, that, like, they feel comfortable asking me. In that way, asking me at all. But why am I being whispered at? What do you think?
I've talked to other people about this, and it's also to do with, and I can't remember if this was a conversation I had with you or with Molly from Ladies Finance Club, is that they, women, and, you know, I've got to, I don't think women need to feel that way, because women are great and women have got bigger brains than men in most cases, and they're much more sensible investors. But I think they're just used to, that's right. Now, Molly was saying that she was in these financial meetings and conferences, and it's always been the men's talking and asking questions and the women sitting quietly by. And I'm not sure why that is in this day and age, that women feel that they need to be sitting quietly in these situations when you're talking about money. And I think the best financial people and the best financial advisors will try and bring along both people in a couple, you know.
I hope so. Well, and it's you know, and I think actually when we're talking about the benefit of financial advice, that is a really big one, is having someone help bring the other half along and have all the information there. So if you
and
know,
explain if, things in a way that they can understand.
And if something happens to the more active partner, you know, things can happen. And then, and you see this a lot, particularly with older women, is that their husband, you know, passes away for whatever reason or is incapacitated, and suddenly they don't even know, like, where actually it's the inverse for my dad. My parents, my dad does not know how to get on to online banking, and my mum takes care of all of it. But they don't even have access to how to get onto the banking. That's the reality of it. Is that you know, often there is one partner in the relationship that has more access to these things. But I think having a financial advisor who's there to help you, if there is something does happen to one partner, they can really help you in those moments of crisis. And I have heard of stories like that, and I've even heard of I have one friend who works in private wealth, which is like financial advisors but for extremely high net worth individuals, and one of his main clients is a really experienced investor. And so you'd be like, well, why does this guy have a financial advisor? He's super experienced. He's completely financially literate. He's made a lot of money. Why would he need a financial advisor? But what my friend disclosed is that his real purpose is that this wealthy investor really wanted to make sure that his family was taken care of if anything happened to him. So he was seeking advice, not so much investment advice of how do I make money, or how do I, you know, where should I put my money? It was much more about facilitating and making sure his family was okay if there was anything to happen to him. So the estate,
yeah. Tax, legal. Tax,
all that stuff. Making sure that if there's one person that takes care of all that for you, and if you're wealthy enough to have that, I think, you know, that made a lot of sense to me. And so, you know, the reasons that people go for financial advisors is super varied, and even super experienced investors still use them for more than just investment advice. Yeah.
So you know about hopeless musicians that don't invest.
I do.
What plans have you got in place for unnamed drummers that...
So Phil is making an allusion to my brother, who happens to be a professional musician in a well-known band. And I, you know, I help him a little bit with investing, because this is not his world, and he's not particularly interested in it, bless his soul. He's kind of just, you know, off in his own musical world. So I have been, you know, in the past, I often will gift him ETF units for his birthday or Christmas. And just, you know, that's a little pot of money that sits to the side if he needs it. And more recently, I'm trying to help him enter the housing market for the first time. So, you know, I like that, you know, he can trust me. And enough to say, oh, this is what we're thinking, and that kind of stuff. So that's all the help that I'm giving at the moment. But it's more just guidance.
But really. You can see where there's ordinary people. I mean, you don't have to be a hopeless musician. Not that he's hopeless. But
he's not. He's a great musician.
Hopeless people all over the place. They've got no idea about money, and they don't have a sister like
you. And they don't have a big sis.
Yeah.
I know, it sucks. Mm-hmm. I wish it was more accessible. And but that's why I think the work that you do is so important, Phil, because this is completely free to listen to. You have people on this podcast from all different institutions. You're not conflicted. You know, you're not being paid to sell one thing or another. You have all different opinions on the podcast. It allows people to kind of get educated and form their own opinions in their own time, in their own way. Like, I think... There's so many people love to listen to podcasts while they're doing other stuff, and I think that's just, you know.
Well, it's great. I mean, so cool. I had a guest on, and he said a wonderful thing. He said, just listen to the words, and because you're not going to understand everything straight away. But if you can let those words wash over you and you start absorbing things, you just start to understand a bit more about how the world works.
Absolutely.
And how money works.
And I mean, it's similar to learning a language. Like, as someone who's now trying to learn Italian, because I'm about to move there and I don't speak it.
I'll give you some good swear words after we get off
here. I haven't learned that. They're not on Duolingo. I haven't learned those yet. But I am, you know, learning languages is similar. Like, often I've learned other languages in the past too, and you have a conversation with someone, and then this word will pop out that you've just never heard of before. And do you abandon the whole conversation? No. I'll either ask, what does that mean? And usually people are really kind enough to explain, or sometimes you just let it roll and just, you know, write it down for later. or just kind of try and work it out from the context of the rest of the conversation.
Mm.
But just like learning language, you know, the best way to do it is to immerse yourself, right? And even if you don't understand everything, you just keep listening and it gets better and better. I remember when I was learning French for the first time, because when you're learning it, I was living there, so you're kind of immersed and you don't really have a measurement of how much you've learned, your progress, because mm-hmm. it's just around you every day. But then when I was there, I went to the cinema and I watched the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo film, but in Swedish, the original version in Swedish. So it was Swedish with French subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed the whole film.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, mm-hmm. I've actually made a lot of progress in my learning that language. And it was that moment where just being out, being like that, that was that moment where I realized that I'd learned a lot. And so I wonder if we could we do that for finance?
That's
like,
right. Yeah.
You know, exactly. This moment where you suddenly like, oh, actually I do know all that the words
sense. Yeah.
in that PDS.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe pull out the PDS and give it a read and see how much you understand.
No matter how dull it is.
Oh my God. PDSs are so boring. As someone who's helped write one them before, they're just so boring. But, you know, or maybe it's watching a more sophisticated film, or even like reading a book, different books, and working out, oh, actually, maybe I have learned a lot more than what I thought I have.
Mm,
if you just absorb through the podcasts and then maybe test yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, that's another thing coming back to the education, the RG146, is you realise that there are those words that in the past I would have didn't think that they were solid. But, you know, like when someone says, say, for example, secondary market.
Yes.
I actually know secondary market is a thing, you know?
Yeah. It's
I'm not going to talk about that now because it's so dull.
That's pretty dull. You don't need to.
But these are the kind of things that you hear and you realise it's like you've learned a bit of the language and you understand what it actually means and how the finance industry is structured. So before we go, let's talk about some books. You've got some holiday reading.
Well, you know, when we talked about going on this podcast, I was like, Phil, what are you going to ask me?
And now we've talked for 36 minutes already with no questions prepared. I love these kind of interviews.
I love it. But, I have been, because I'm in the process of moving, I've been going through all my stuff because I've got to get rid of everything pretty much.
Mm.
But I've been going through my library, and I actually, you know, I actually have a number of books that are related to finance that are really good kind of summer reads.
Mm.
So, and when I was at eInvest, I used to always do a blog post at this time of year where I'd ask all my portfolio managers, what are you reading this summer? And I would share those around. That always did really well. So I figured I'd bring my own of like some books that I could recommend that are finance related, but are also like kind of interesting as well.
Yeah.
So
and they're not the usual.
They're not the
books.
Usual.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Well, I'll start with this one. Freezing. Have you had? Surely you've talked about Red Notice before on this podcast.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I'm surprised you haven't heard of this one yet, or if you haven't talked about Red Notice before, because it is one of the. It's honestly like it's like Jason Bourne meets finance.
Wow.
And it's a true story.
Well, hang on, what's it say on the cover? What's that? A true story of
Russian money laundering, murder, and surviving Vladimir Putin's wrath.
Wow.
So this is the second one to the first book called Red Notice, which is about. It's all written by Bill Browder. He's also really good to follow on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to keep up with Russian sanctions and Putin and the war in Ukraine, it's very, very relevant to what's going on right now. But basically, he was a hedge fund manager in the world's largest Russian hedge fund manager, and was eventually persecuted by Putin. He had to escape, and his lawyer was murdered in prison by Putin's cronies. He became a human rights activist, and then basically through that activism pushed for I'm going to pronounce the name wrong, Magnitsky Act, which is the Russian sanctions on the sanctions in the US on Russian oligarchs. And so it was really about using finance to punish Putin and his oligarchs, but really hurt him where it hurts, which is his money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was essentially, all these Russian oligarchs were essentially hiding all their wealth in Western nations primarily through Western banking systems. And so through his activism, he's helped enact the Magnitsky Act in the US, but also in all over the world. And he was in Australia not that long ago, also pushing for us to take upon these laws, these sanction laws as well. Fascinating read. As I said, it reads the Red Notice and then Freezing Orders, the more modern one, and it really relevant to what's going on in the Ukraine right now. Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
And they're making a film about it.
Yeah.
And I think the Jason Bourne director is also making a film about it.
Oh, okay.
So it is really like Jason Bourne makes finance. Love it. And then I've got these two, which are like the opposites of each other. So I've got The World of Three Zeros by Muhammad Yunus. And then I've got Barbarians at the Gate, The Fall of J.R. Nabisco.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like Barbarians at the Gate is like a classic finance book. It's about the fall of RJR Nabisco, which was a large American conglomerate. It's essentially like peak Wall Street greed and how that fell, that caused, and like basically how this enormous company fell thanks to peak Wall Street greed. It's really good.
Yeah.
And then this one here, The World of Three Zeros by Muhammad Yunus is, so Muhammad Yunus is a Bangladeshi man who won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2006, and he's talked all about how finance can change the world for the better.
Mm-hmm.
The World of Three Zeros, he refers to how microfinance particularly, he says, the new economics of zero poverty, zero unemployment, and zero carbon emissions. So he was kind of the first creator of microfinance or microlending.
Yep, yeah.
And
which happens a lot in developing nations, isn't it, where small, very, very small projects are financed at a village level.
Village level stuff. And so he created what's called the Grameen Bank, which was a bank that basically did these tiny micro loans. So even like, you know, lending a few dollars. So one example he gives is how in one specific area, there was a lot of families, young children were having problems with their eyesight. They weren't getting enough, I think it's vitamin A.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of the exact vitamin, but one of the vitamins. And so he was lending money, very small amount of money, so they could buy tomato seeds. So then these families would start growing tomatoes in their garden, in their backyard, like small tomato plants. They'd sell some of the tomatoes to make some money, and then they'd also feed their kids these tomatoes. And that actually really helped improve the eyesight of these children and provided money for them. And
how lucky families are we in the West, eh?
I know, right? Yeah. But like to think that, you know, what I really like about this is that it's really talks about how capitalism can be used for good. And it's a fascinating book. So and it's a pretty easy read as well. So definitely recommend this to The World of Three Zeros by Muhammad Yunus.
Okay, well, I'll put that in the episode notes, all the books and some links. Jody, it's been great chatting with you. Good luck in Milan.
Thank you.
I'll give you one Italian word, which is very useful in clothing stores. Proviamo.
Proviamo. What does that mean?
Oh, it's just whenever you're in a clothing store, the sales assistant will say, proviamo, let's try it.
Let's try it. Okay, like that. Proviamo. I've learned from Italian, the iamo at the end means we. So let's try it together. Like it's
Together.
We'll try it together. It's so
ci vediamo, ragazza.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a but I have to say my Italian's still very basic. So
yeah.
Sounds like you're ahead of me there.
Oh, not very far. Only a tiny bit.
So, you know, I in terms of like what it's Italy and what's happening next, you know, I don't even know. Like I'll obviously look for a new job while I'm over there. I don't know. Obviously, I love talking business B2C, like talking to individual investors. I don't know how I'm going to do that in Italy because I don't speak Italian. So I'm not sure. I'll probably get more of it in.
I'm sure they can organize an Italian front for you.
We'll see. I'm sure whatever happens, it's going to be an adventure.
Jody, thanks very much.
Thank you.
If you found this podcast helpful, please tell a friend, especially if it's someone who needs to start thinking about investing for their future. You'll be helping them and helping me to keep this show on the road.
Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, and you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation.
And thank you for listening to my podcast.
Hold up. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.